12 minutes. Congratulations, you're number one. 12 minutes past 10 o'clock. If you know that theme tune, it is to RuPaul's Drag Race. It's a great TV show, great reality TV show, where it's drag artists going at it against each other on the runway, on the platform, trying to out-shimmy each other. It is absolutely great entertainment. There's something, what, into like the 13th or 14th season already? And today in the history of, we explore the beauty, the drama, the flair, the showpersonship, and the influence of Cape drag culture. The history, or shall we say her story, of drag and drag queens and kings. It's rich and it's textured. It's a tale that's as old as time. It's an art form which has evolved from common theater to award-winning TV entertainment. It's gained quite a lot of legitimacy on the local and international stages, not just from the burlesque and other performance stages that we see here. It's become very, very mainstream. So we thought, let's look at the history of drag culture in South Africa. Joining me now is a doyen, a legend, an absolute icon, not only in drag performance in Cape Town, but in theater and music altogether in the city of Cape Town. Terry Fortune, how are you doing this morning?
Hi, good morning, Lester. I'm fine. Thanks for inviting me. I am looking so forward to participating in this discussion. I want to say from the outset that I'm thrilled that drag has finally been recognized as part of the art forms that is celebrated in South Africa and in Cape Town.
I also want to bring into the conversation in a short while Alexander Tabisha, also known as Vida Van Tabisha, drag performer.
Hello.
Hello, Alex, or hello, Vida. Are we in character or are we not in character today?
Listen, I'm always in character. I might not look it at the moment, but...
I'm looking forward to getting stuck into this. But Terry, I want to talk to you first and want to get some of your stories, your anecdotes, some of the history, some of the lessons, some of the stories that you've picked up over the years. Drag is not something that is unfamiliar, particularly in Cape Town. For years, we've had performances, shows. We've had in our communities people who have performed in our civic centers and our halls in drag. We have it part of the Kaapse Klopse once a year. So I want to know from you, where does your history, your involvement from drag stem from?
Okay, I started in 1970 in drag. I entered a competition in Johannesburg, a talent search, and there were some amazing singers at the time, and I was into the music field, but I just started. And in order to compete effectively, I felt I needed to be different. I tried different costumes at a theater hiring company, and then the person who was helping me now said to me, you know, I've just been to London, and I saw a drag persona at the London Palladium was hugely successful. And I thought, that's different insofar it's not completely reinventing the wheel, but it was different enough. And I always feel that I didn't choose drag, drag chose me. And and I also had realized at that time that I knew nothing about it. And I knew nothing about makeup. I knew nothing about costumes. I knew nothing about music, or I didn't have sufficient information. So I went to, I got a pair of high heels, and I went to do a modeling couple of lessons in modeling to learn to walk on high heels. I went to Yardley's and did a course in makeup just to get an idea of what the technical requirements were. So that's how I got into drag. But I remember when I was a kid, and this is my memory of drag in Cape Town. I remember when I was about 7 or 8 years old, we lived in Harfield, and one Saturday, a lorry, you know, an open lorry, came past the house, and there were these drag ladies, I would say drag ladies, on, and they were dancing on the lorry. And I remember I ran off to the lorry and followed them all down the street. And I also remember that also when I was a kid, when I was young, in my early teenage years, there were also at the Woodstock Town Hall, they used to have competitions. Then it was called like, and it was a derogative term. They used to call them Morphe Queen competitions. So it was a different kind of social environment which we were in, besides the fact that we were also experiencing apartheid, and the nationalist government was very Calvinistic in their attitude to sexuality. So my journey was kind of different to other artists, both in the drag field, because I went into the – I connected my drag to the music industry.
And you, and you performed different. Everywhere from ocean liners to Sun City to – and I read – was it being snuck into Swaziland back then, what's now called Eswatini, to perform drag in the deepest, darkest time of apartheid?
That's right. I guess for a man of color to have chosen, because I chose it as a career. I didn't choose it as a lifestyle. And I think that's what our conversation, I presume our conversation is about drag performers as opposed to persons who chooses drag as a lifestyle. I did not choose it as a lifestyle. I chose it as a performance. I had studied as a social worker. And after about 2 years, I thought, well, this is boring, sitting around in front of a desk and having to wait until I'm 65 for a pension. I wanted to do something. I wanted to have a more, let's not say a flamboyant lifestyle, but I wanted to travel. I wanted to do other things. I knew that there was more to life than just apartheid. And I also knew that I wasn't the only gay person. So that wasn't something that bothered me. I'm also, I've been fortunate in that aspect that I think that the important thing that I did for the Cape Town music fraternity is to remind them that drag is very much part of the arts and that it is not a separate entity. It's not a separate thing for persons who only – and it does not necessarily reflect – drag does not reflect your sexuality. There's also the thing that –
Vida, I want to bring into this conversation. And many people now asking you, look, what is drag? And as Terry said, drag performance is not necessarily living as part of the LGBTQI community. But many people who do perform in drag are members of the LGBTQI community. How do you describe to a person on the street, a family member, when you are performing drag, that this isn't necessarily my identity, but this is a performance that I want to partake in?
Well, essentially, drag for many years, centuries, have been performed by members of the LGBT community, but because it's now seen as an art form, it's not limited to that, you know? What it is at its most primal form is a man dressing up in women's clothing for entertainment. And I feel like gay men are more comfortable to do that. But as time has gone on, people, straight men even, have seen it as the art form and something that they would like to explore. So I feel drag can be performed by anyone.
When did you first put on your first pair of high heels, and I'm using all the tropes here, putting on that first pair of high heels, you know, a little bit of lipstick, and then tossing that feather boa around your neck.
I was probably about 7, and it was my mother's high heels. Because I've always been fascinated by women's clothing and the glamour and, you know, those Hollywood sirens and stuff like that. But even at that young age, I knew that I didn't want to be a woman. So I was quite confused as to the my affinity for those things. And as time went by and I learned some more things, I discovered this thing called drag, where men could dress up in women's clothing and then do a performance and then take it off. And that sounded very, very thrilling to me, you know.
Terry, who are your idols? If you are the genesis of drag performance in South Africa, who was there before you? Who did you model your performances on?
Okay, let me just go give you a sort of, you know, during District 6, when District 6 still existed, there were persons like QP and Sandra D who used to do drag. So the drag culture, as you have stated, even during the carnival, the klopse, they had always a voorlooper, as they would call them, was a drag person, and those kinds of persons used to poke fun, and also for entertainment purposes. So mine was two. I saw. When I was in my teenage, well, late teenage years, I saw Eartha Kitt performing. I loved her sultriness, her sensuality, not her sexuality, but her sensuality. I loved the way she performed and how she used her body to express her art form. Quite often, that's besides the singing. But one of the persons who also influenced me musically was Tandi Klaassen and Maria Makeba. I think I must have sung Jikalama when he see a but I think I must have sung it more times than Maria Makeba. And that stood me in good stead because it made me an African drag performer. I say drag performer as opposed to a drag queen. I'm not wild about the idea of
because as part of the performance, the theater, there's also something called drag kings, where women dress up and perform and act and go on stage and sing as men.
Yeah,
100%, 100%. I agree on that. Alex, what do you feel about that?
Look, it's not as big as drag queens, you know. I feel because, and this is going to go now, but like deep into it, but because masculinity has always been seen as like the standard, the go-to, drag kings performing is almost not as exciting because of that. The masculinity is the standard that you want to reach.
Is masculinity, the performing masculinity, an impediment to performance, to showpersonship, the glitz and glamour? Why does it not attract you as much as drag queen?
Well, I'm not saying me. I'm just saying the studies, because I did my thesis on drag a few years ago, and people doing drag, men dressing up in women's clothing, it's seen as this affront to masculinity, you know? It's subversive. It's a slap in masculinity's face, and that's now, according to society, years and years of this hyping up men, the patriarchy, you know? That's why it's so exciting, but when women dress up in men's clothing, it's almost seen as, you know, it's fine. It's supposed to be that way because of what masculinity is. That's why women can day-to-day wear pants and more masculine things. But if a man walks, a straight man or a gay man even walks somewhere in a skirt, obviously so many eyes are going to be on them because it's like, what are you doing, you know?
Terry?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Terry.
Before you ask, I agree with what Alex says. Also, I think maybe because it is less flamboyant visually. I think male doing female drag, which means beautiful costumes, glitter, makeup and wigs. It's probably much more flamboyant for. I remember Julie Andrews did a movie where she played a man. And that was also interesting.
Barbara Streisand
in Yentl.
Yes, in Yentl. She dressed up as a man. And you're right. Well, and there was also, what's the movie? Tootsie.
Yes, Dustin Hoffman.
If I were just on what were far more entertaining movies, Dustin Hoffman in Tootsie was far more entertaining than Barbara Streisand in Yentl.
Excuse me.
I touched.
Be careful, sir.
I want to continue with this conversation, but after Eyewitness News, so we'll bring Alex and Terry back. We're talking about on Wednesdays. We usually talk about the history of something that is important, significant to us here in Cape Town and us in South Africa. I've been watching a lot of RuPaul's Drag Race. It's what, in its 14th season now. Alex?
I think so, 14.
14 seasons. And it's gotten a whole lot of mainstream appeal. Let's talk before we get to Eyewitness News, Alex.
No.
You have, as you say, this is not a art form that is exclusively for the LGBTQI community. It's gone far more mainstream. Straight men are dressing up as in drag. But you have some in the community saying like, hey, when it was dangerous for us to do so, when we were being laughed at, no one wanted to touch us. And now that we as a community have made this mainstream, all of a sudden, a lot of straight men want to dress up in drag with no repercussions and no comebacks whatsoever. Your thoughts on that?
But that's the thing, you know, it's the thing that has been an issue with a lot of different marginalized communities. You know, it's been ridiculed for a long time, and then it gains a little bit of popularity and people want to jump on it with, like you say, no repercussions. And I do believe that drag is for everyone, but people need to understand that we have paved the way. We went through all of the ridicule and all of that kind of thing. So it would be nice if that aspect of it is acknowledged a little bit more, you know? For a lot of people, it's lived experiences, and for others, it's just putting on a costume, getting a little bit of hype, getting some likes on social media, and then taking it off and going on your merry way, and that's that, you know?
I want to pick up with this conversation just after Eyewitness News. Terry Fortune, Vida Fantabusha, joining us here on the show for the history of drag. Let's go to a quick voice note. 0725671567. It is the history of drag here on the Morning Review. Terry Fortune, Alex, Vida Fantabusha, Alexander joining us here on the show. But let's quickly, a quick voice note.
Hi, Lester. Listening to the drag conversation, and I was just thinking, I remember being in London and going to the Rose Theatre, which was one of Shakespeare's original theatres, and where I learned that originally all actors were men, at least there. So in Shakespearean times, all the actors were men. And so any of the female characters in any of those famous Shakespeare novels or stories or theatre pieces that we know were all performed by men, and they would have been performed by the men with the most feminine features and the most feminine mannerisms. And I thought that was, you know, so and in those in that time, that was completely normal. And it would have been unusual for a woman to be an actor. That would have been the big shock. So just to add that as an interesting, you know, how things have changed between what was acceptable then to be on stage and what is acceptable now.
Terry, we often don't give drag performers their due credit when it comes to influencing politics, not just here in South Africa, but around the world, taking almost the sting out of fiery political conversations, using that very, very powerful weapon of satire. I think of you and the role that you've played. I think of the role that Pieter Dirk Ace has played with Evita Besaidenhout. Drag has been used as a very, very important political tool in South Africa.
That's right. I'm glad that you referred to Peter Dirkie Ace, because his contribution in satire and using drag to reflect the ridiculousness of the philosophy of apartheid is so important. I don't necessarily think, I think maybe the community at large don't completely realize that contribution, and they just took it for granted. I think it is also a compliment to the artists that they were so convincing in their art form of that when people watched them, they did not consider the person's sexuality, but more focused on what they were trying to achieve and what they were saying. And that is what drag is, that it is an art form. Mark Lottering does that as well, in that he makes social comments that is very prevalent in our communities. And that is so true. I think in other first world countries, that has maybe been recognized much more than in South Africa.
I think of
but it is starting to develop.
I think of Barry Humphries and Dame Edna Everidge, Alex. I think of RuPaul, the host, the brains behind RuPaul's Drag Race, using drag to mainstream this in Western entertainment and pop culture, but also providing business platforms, part of the economy, inclusions, adding chairs and seats to the table for drag performers and the LGBTQI community using that tool of drag and drag performance.
Absolutely. And I think it's a wonderful thing, you know, because a lot of the time, due to homophobia and things like that, back in the day, opportunities weren't as easy as they are now. Mm. You know, I've been doing drag for just a little under 10 years. And because of shows like that, I've had a very lovely career. I used to be in drag almost thrice a week, you know, because of shows and exposure and representation. And now people seeing that it's exciting. Now we have drag in the city. Let's do shows. Let's do more shows, you know. And it's a lovely thing for up-and-coming artists to have the platforms to perform and to showcase what they have to offer. And to make some money.
Angus Leendert's calling into our open line. Angus, good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, Lester. How are you?
I'm very good. You want to talk about how drag has impacted you?
I want to talk about a very specific incident which happened 40 years ago in Sydney, Australia, when I was living there. I passed what was then one of the big gay clubs, and I saw a poster which said that Terry Fortune from Cape Town was performing. So I went on the Sunday night. It was in a piano bar, and at some time Terry appeared in full drag, and there was a gasp from the audience because it was the first time they had seen a drag person who could actually sing and sing beautifully, because most of the drag queens or drag performers in Sydney used to lip sync. So that was my introduction to Terry Fortune, and over the years that I've met him, he has done a lot to work against attitudes of homophobia. He's been a mentor, as you know, to many young performers. And I just wanted to say what a wonderful experience that was 40 years ago. Thank you, Terry.
Absolute legend, Terry Fortune. Do you feel that weight of history? Thanks so much for the call, Angus. Do you feel that weight of history of being, you know, one of the first recognized drag performers in South Africa, Terry?
No. You know, I've never kind of felt that because of me choosing drag, I always looked at myself as an artist performing and using drag to convey my message. I've never kind of thought about, wow, why would a man of color choose during apartheid something like that? I just felt, as I said, that drag chose me for whatever reason. There's one expression which I love, and I think it sums up so beautifully our conversation. There's an expression which says, we are all born naked, the rest is drag. And that is so true, because drag does not necessarily mean wearing a woman's dress. It means also wearing whatever costume and whatever you choose to wear. to convey the persona or the character or what you are trying to say to your audience and to your society. You know?
Alex, I want to end off with you. Alex Vida, Fantabisha. You may have been performing drag for 10 years, Terry for decades, but you know that I was in a Broadway show of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. It was a couple of years ago. It was in the States, and during halftime or the intermission, they go through the crowd, ask who wants to come up on stage, and they give you bows and stuff. So I can legitimately say, unpaid, but I was a walk-on cast member of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, one of my favorite movies until this day, one of
love
my favorite musical
you.
Performers. What do you want to do? Where do you want to take this career of drag performance, Alex?
Well, for me, drag is a hobby and an art form, a creative expression. I am a lecturer, actually. So that's my main line of work, but it's in makeup and costume. So it kind of correlates. So I'm not sure if I want to be a star, but I'm always going to be fascinated by this beautiful art form.
Excellent. Alex Vida Fantabisha, drag performer. Also, Terry Fortune, one of the legends of the stage. And you're in Cape Town. Thank you so much, gentlemen. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much for being part of this conversation in the history of All the Best.